Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Hey guys, my name is David Cleope, and I am an addict and an alcoholic. However, I've been in recovery for a while. And besides those two things, I am also the host of the Most High Show. So we want to welcome everybody. And if you're not familiar with the Most High Show, it's a format or it's a place where we gather and we share stories and we get to listen to stories of recovery, the joy in recovery, the struggles of addiction. And we have guests come on that we are honored to have that are courageous and vulnerable enough to give us their side of things and how things went with them. And this evening, we have Alex. What's up, man?
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, brother. How about you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, absolutely, man. We appreciate having you. So just to catch you up on how it goes, so what I want to do is I just want to hear your story. You know what I mean? I want to hear how things went with you and how things are going with you. So what I want to do first, I want to jump to today. And then after we jump to today, we'll take it all the way back to however far you want to go. Is that cool?
Sounds good.
All right. So what is present day like for Alex? What's going on with you today?
Well, today it's like, of course, I still have struggles. Right. Of course, I still... You know, because now, today, I've realized that, like, it wasn't just drugs and alcohol. Yeah. That was my problem. It was my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have a solution today to deal with my thinking.
A way. Besides right. An escape, right?
Right. Exactly. Because yeah. Drugs and alcohol, all they did was just render my thoughts, uh-huh. thinking, feelings for only a time.
Right.
And, of course, it would just come back. Of course, with shame, guilt, whatever other emotions come with using.
Right. That's that's deep, man. It's like this is a spiritual thing because those were almost the exact words for no reason. But those were the exact words almost that was going through my head on my travels here. You know, like, you know, how I dealt with things in addiction. Dealt with issues because today I have a lot of issues, a lot of problems, but man, it's so much better to deal with them and get through them without using, right?
That's the thing, man. It's like today I'm free.
Amen.
Today I can actually walk with my head high.
Wow, man.
Today I can wake up in the morning
right.
and look at myself in the mirror.
What a feeling, dude. That just gave me chills, man. You saying it the way you delivered that. That was good. I appreciate that.
It blows me back. Yeah. You know, every morning, you know, with my recovery, I wake up and I have to get connected to something bigger than me. Right? So I got tapped into this power that I found within inside me. It was just blocked.
Yeah.
By fear, resentment, harms I've done in the past. But I've cleared all that away. So now I'm connected, right? But I have to wake up every morning with that thought of power on my mind.
Wow.
Of not myself, but yeah. something bigger than me.
Not your power. It's
right. Something bigger than me.
Right.
And of course, I think about past stuff sometimes mm-hmm. in my meditation.
Right.
And it's like, it almost has me choked up in tears.
Because mm-hmm.
when I first got sober, if I tried to draw up what my life looks like today, mm-hmm. I would have sold myself short.
Wow.
It's just miraculous.
Yeah. It's a huge miraculous blessing, man.
Right.
You know, and it is bigger than us. You know, I can't. You know, I've been asked like, you know, what is it, man, Dave? What's keeping you sober or what? And it's sort of unexplainable. All I can say was like, it, you know, I can go through a step by step of it, but you know, like overarching thing is like the spirituality of the spiritual understanding that has came to me. That gets me through this, knowing it's not all about me, man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's so much bigger than me. And like those things that like were impossible for me to like accomplish, I'm accomplishing them now, but it's not me. You know what I mean? It's like something bigger than me is making those things possible. You know what I mean? Yes. Closer to the mic. Oh, okay. You're from Sandy Springs, correct? You live in Sandy
Springs? I live in Sandy Springs right now.
And you're landscaping or? Go ahead.
Okay. I'm a spray tech.
Yeah.
For a company.
Yeah.
Which is cool because when I first got out of the recovery center I was at, you know, I went for the first thing that was presented to me, which was installation, basically shoveling rocks 12 hours a day, all day long.
Right.
And it just was not a good situation, right? But I kept telling myself that I just need to do this to be able to support myself so I can do this, which is help people.
A good perspective, dude.
You know, my sobriety is contingent on my spiritual fitness, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing is, like, I think back in the past and, you know, if I don't stay in the middle of this recovery, helping people, you know, showing people the way that I got sober, I'll soon forget where I came from.
Yeah, you got to give it away. And that's what you're doing right now.
You know, the pain was sufficient enough to get me sober.
Yeah.
But it's not sufficient enough to keep me sober.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%, man.
There's other things that I need to do.
But anyways, so let's look. So that's in a nutshell what today looks like, right? You're in this place where
safe and protected,
right? You're getting this spiritual guidance, right? It's moving you forward. You're realizing things. You know, you have a totally new perspective on your existence, I would say, right?
Correct.
But it wasn't always like that, right? And you know. And a part of this show is doing that journey, you know, so let's, and I want to go back wherever you feel comfortable going back to. And I just, you know, I want to know, how did it start? How did it start? You know, you can go back as far as you want, you know, where does your journey start?
Well, you know, my earliest memories, you know, my mother and my father, they got divorced when I was 1 year old.
Okay.
So one of my first memories, I was about 3 or 4, is like my dad telling me like, hey, you know, I'm going away. I'll be back. We'll go down Disney World, this and that. Mm-hmm. And then he left and he never came back. Mm-hmm. So I felt abandoned, of course. You know, of course, as a child, we think that it's our fault.
Yeah.
You know, we want to blame ourselves for it. And then... You know, another early memory, I was probably 5 or 6. My mom's had a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, he dealt with alcoholism as well.
Right.
You know, he, one late night, I guess they got in a fight. He kind of like forced his way into our house, stood over us and just like threatened us and basically to hurt us. And all I can remember is I felt really scared and vulnerable and like I was in danger. Yeah. So I told myself right then that I never wanted to make like feel that way again. So in the future, you know, whenever I'd have fear like that come up, mm-hmm. I'd either run as fast as I could away from it or I'd charge it head on, which usually would always put me in a bad position.
Right. So you're dealing with trauma.
Right. So, you know, fast forward. When I look back on my life, you know, I was in daycare. And I was probably 8, 9 years old. Mm-hmm. It's before drugs and alcohol even had, you know, but I hit a kid at my daycare. We got into it or something. I hit him. I didn't feel right about hitting him. Mm-hmm. But then when I got on the bus with all the other big kids and stuff, they were like, man, that's so cool. Like, you know, look at him. He, you know, he got in a fight. So through my conditioning and my surroundings, I'm like, okay, this is making me feel a part of.
Accepted.
Exactly. Accepted by people. So I'm going to carry this on. This rebel, bad boy mentality, I'm going to carry on throughout my life.
Yeah. You know what? That's a... And really, I mean, I don't think that's a... that's a rare thing. I mean, any, you know, especially, you know, guys, you're growing up as a kid.
Right.
You get in that fight and you pull it out. Everybody is giving you the, you know, everybody. It's just such an event. School fights, childhood fights, and it, and man, that's that status can follow you forever.
Yeah.
You know, you're always, you know, that you, that becomes your identity. That's where you feel like this, you feel exhilarated, you feel popular, you feel cool. Like that brings a lot of those feelings. And I guess the bottom line is acceptance, especially in your case, right? You're getting attention. People are kind of like looking at you like you're a badass, and you'll let you me know, rock out with that.
A sense of belonging.
Yeah.
You know.
No doubt.
And so this is, I'm probably 11, 12 years old.
Right.
You know, my mom meets my stepdad, mm-hmm. which is my father now. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, a guy coming into the mix when it's just been me and my mom for so long. It's like, who are you, you know, to come in my house, even though I'm like 12 years old, you know?
Right.
And it was just constantly just butting heads, mm-hmm. you know?
That's just a tough age too. I mean, that's a tough age to see another dude like come into your life and have this authoritative,
right,
over you, you know what I mean?
You're like, my mom's attention is now not just solely on me.
Yeah, that's hardcore.
And it goes towards him. I just remember being young and just like, you know, when I was with my friends, it was cool and everything. But when I was by myself, I felt so alone.
Yeah.
Like, I just felt so alone, like to the point where like I was so consumed with myself and that I wasn't good enough or that I didn't belong or that, you know, all this stuff in my thinking that wasn't really true in the end, but I thought it was
right.
through my beliefs. So, you know, I don't know if I was being dramatic or what, but mm-hmm. you know, I would sit there contemplating suicide at mm-hmm. such a young age. And of course, through all this, I'm acting out in school because of course, bad boy mentality. It's like, I'm taking it into my school, disrupting classes, not sitting down, getting up, just all this different stuff. And, you know, cause I was seeking attention. Mm-hmm. So of course my mom's like, there's something wrong with my baby. I need to take him to psychiatrist and all this other stuff. And, and they put me on pills and different pharmaceuticals. Wow. And all it ended up doing was just messing up my chemical balance more.
Right. Now, that's a great description of what like childhood into the preteen years kind of look like before
any, drugs and
before
alcohol
anything even effect, like dude. Becomes, you know, a part of that. Yeah.
So, you know, the first time I smoked weed, okay, you know, there's certain things I don't remember the first time doing, but I remember the first time I smoked weed because it was like, I have a, like, this is the answer.
Yeah.
Like all these thoughts of not belonging, not being good enough, being abandoned, you know, people don't like me, all these crazy thoughts in my head, just silence. Everything was good. Everything was good.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I was like, this is it. I found the answer. Like, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life.
Right.
And I was 13 years old. So I was like, if we can do this, what are other stuff?
Yeah.
Right.
It's a funny thing about marijuana, right? Because I mean, our stories are really similar, and you know, to this point, you know, same age, you know. And what I loved about marijuana was like the euphoria was what I interpreted almost as a feeling of like love and laughter and acceptance. I mean, you get around a bunch of dudes, you know, and it kind of like changes. It flips this like, man, I've, you know, you probably had to have your guard up coming up, right?
Right.
Because you're ready to get down with anybody. And then you smoke and it kind of like, it's a very accepting type of feeling, you know? Yeah. But then, it, you know, for me at least, it led to definitely different other
right.
stuff.
You know, it's debatable if it's a gateway drug or not, but in my experience, it's a gateway drug.
Yeah, me too, man. And that's just my experience.
Right,
too,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
But
no judgment at all, you know.
So, you know, me and my stepfather had gotten into it pretty bad. You know, we got into a huge argument and there was some physical contact in it. And, you know, I took off. I ran away. I was 13 years old and I just ran away.
Wow.
Stayed gone for about a month. Now, the neighborhood I ran off to, it had a really bad meth problem. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I always had this thing growing up where I wanted to be like all the older people. Yeah. I saw all the older people smoking meth. So I was like, you know, I want to do that. Even though I'm 13 years old, I want to do that. Okay. So I started smoking meth at 13, and it just, I don't know how to put it. It just drank, it took everything out of me.
Yeah.
Right. At that age. But, you know, I didn't have to deal with looking at myself or my problems or anything that was going on.
And all the chaos,
all
the stuff that if you're sober, you wake up sober and look in the mirror, you're like, what? You can't go there.
Right, right.
And meth is the way to not, definitely not go there, right?
So, you know, it just, my mom, you know, putting up missing persons,
I was wondering, I was wondering how that was going.
Begging me to come home on the phone, and just
so you're kind of like loose communication,
right? Yeah. And I just didn't have any consideration for her, you know. Mm-hmm. Like I wasn't thinking about like what I was putting my mom or my stepfather through, because like, you know, that's his wife.
Yeah,
you know, he loves her.
Right,
they love each other, and like he's watching his wife have a deal with an unruly child.
Yeah.
And just all the stress, and this happens throughout the years. I mean, this is just. And it's crazy how they're still there.
Wow.
You know, I've had friends running the streets with me, and like their parents, don't mess with them. Don't talk to them. Nothing.
That's a great point of view that you pointed out too. I don't think it gets enough attention that, you know, like a step parent, they step into this role and it's almost like, you know, no matter what they do, it's wrong. And they can't even like get in it, because then it'll be really wrong.
Dude, you know, he didn't even know what he was getting himself into. I mean, like literally coming into it, he's like, oh, she has a son. I accept him. Yeah. You know, she's beautiful. And then like comes into the situation. I'm just tearing everything apart.
Like, tearing it down.
Like a tornado, man.
Wow.
Just ripping through all their lives.
And he's like watching your mother like, really go through it, looking for you. Where is he at? I hope he's safe. And he has to sit beside that.
Right.
It's tough, man. That's a tough scene, bro.
So, you know, there's other parts to all this. You know, I got into cocaine, Xanax, all that stuff at a young age. Drinking, you know, probation was always there, but it wasn't enough.
Right.
You know, usually normal people would be like, okay, I'm on probation. So maybe I should not do drugs because, you know, it's against the rules.
Yeah.
An addict's mentality is like, It does not matter.
I know he's probably not going to give me a urine this week.
So maybe I can do it at the beginning of the week.
Not.
Yeah, and be good later on. Yeah. It's our thinking.
It's crazy, right?
It's our thinking.
It's insanity, bro.
It is
for real insane. It's craziness, man.
So, so I was, you know, I went back home, whole thing, and
now when you go back home, you end up making the decision to go back home. Is there like, all right, I'm gonna go get it right when I go back home, or are you just going home?
It was more of just like, hey, I'm going back so my mom stops creating this huge
crazy
thing.
Right,
and you know, so years go by, and you know, I'm going to talk about it. So I was, you know, I was still young.
Mm-hmm.
We were on the side of a house smoking weed and stuff. And one of my friends was like, yo, bet you won't kick open that door. And some other dude was like, yeah, I'll kick it open, kicks it open. And then we realized that we can break into these houses, take their stuff, and get drugs for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no doubt.
At a very young age. And anyways, they end up finding out. We go to jail, juvenile. And this is what the point I want to talk about is, I remember being in jail, in the cell, on my knees, and I swear if you would have hooked me up to a lie detector, I would have passed it, because I was like, God, please let me out of here. I promise I'll never smoke weed again. Like, I'll never do anything bad again. You know what I'm saying? Like, no drugs. And then, of course, I get out with great intentions, but, you know, I miss that ease, right?
Right.
You know, I'm there's this thing inside
it's still
me.
Turning.
It's just like, and I need that ease.
Yeah.
So of course I go back to smoking weed and whatnot.
Right. you don't have any tools. You just want to get out of this. I mean, you're sincerely, you want to get out of there. God, please, like, let me out of here. I promise. I meant that at the time. That's a prayer that so many has made, bro, just to get him out of that tough situation that they're in, you know? So I dig that.
And so I'm on probation. Some years go by. I was about 15 years old. And, you know, there's older guys. I loved hanging out with older people. I wanted to be like them. And so they were like, hey, we'll pick you up. Just sneak out. Sneak out of my house. Get picked up by them. We're going to meet somebody to go drink or something. And that's the last thing I remember. I wake up in the hospital about a month later.
A month later? What?
Like 3 or 4 weeks later.
Wow.
I had been in a coma. We were in a car crash.
Whoa.
Okay. We hit a car going 98 miles per hour head on.
Damn.
Head on. And I broke my spine in 4 different places. I crushed my pelvis, dislocated my left leg. 37 staples in my head. Had bleeding on my brain.
Whoa.
That's why I was in an induced coma, for the bleeding to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent probably 2 more months, 3 months rehabilitating in the hospital. Physical therapy after. Not thinking about anything. What's the next thing I do once I leave? Go right back to the deal. You know, I look at all these consequences, but it wasn't enough driving force yet.
Yeah. So you're still dealing with life, regardless of what happens.
Right.
You know, like, if somebody would say, man, how could he? But it's like, you don't have you don't know what it looks like without it. You're just healing, man, from a vicious accident. That doesn't mean like this light comes down over you and all of a sudden you're like floating above people living great, you know. No, that's not it, man. It doesn't go down like that, you know.
I mean, like, right when I got out of the hospital, I was like on crutches going up to this girl's house because I knew we could drink and smoke and do whatever we wanted there.
Yeah,
you know. So I carry this bad boy mentality through high school. And, you know, I start selling weed because, like, I'm that guy.
Right.
The guy everyone's looking towards.
Right.
And, you know, one night, they ended up raiding my house. I was 17 years old. They raided my house. And they found 16.9 grams of stems. And they were like, we heard there's massive amounts of marijuana. You give us somebody, or we're taking you, your mom, and your stepdad to jail. And at the time, you know, I just, I'm sorry, mom, we're going to jail. And that's what we did.
Whoa.
All three of us went to jail. And,
let me go back. They found stems?
Stems. I was like, you're taking us to jail for stems? And they're like, it has THC. It contains THC, so it is weed. They were upset.
That
they
is wild,
they spent that much
bro.
Money.
Oh, yeah.
And
they came through thinking there was...
They couldn't get a position.
The mother, you know, load.
Yeah, intent charge. So it's...
That was crazy.
Yeah. It was in my room.
Yeah.
But it was in my parents' house.
Yeah.
And they were trying to look for any leverage...
Yeah,
to try to get someone else, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, and seeing my mom on the other side of the cells, you know, getting processed in something, you know, all that, and it's just, it tore me apart.
I can imagine.
You know, so I was like, okay, I'm going to get out, I'm going to smoke the rest of what I have, because I left it with a friend. I was like, I'm going to smoke the rest of what I have, and then I'm done. You know, and we can get out with the best intentions.
Yeah.
But if there's no like real game plan with a real solution,
yeah,
we're gonna go back.
You're
to
freestyling, man.
Yeah, man.
You're just freestyling,
playing
man.
It by ear.
Yeah, thinking you got it, or thinking all you have to do is stop.
Right.
It's not that easy, man. No. So okay. So let's get to where you start seeing some sort of solution or some sort of way to keep this life, to stop this type of lifestyle, this type of chaos, if you don't mind. You know,
no,
if
we can, we can move forward.
Yeah, yeah,
So, in a nutshell, I started using IV, you know, stepped up IV heroin, IV
no meth. Doubt.
I got really bad off. I mean, to the point where I had gout in my legs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was overdosing, hospital trips. Yeah. I sold heroin to an undercover detective. Mm-hmm. A series of events took place to where I was sitting in a jail cell again.
Right.
And through manipulation, I was like, what can I do to get out of here? So I agreed with my mother to go to a recovery center.
Wow.
Right when I get to the recovery center, I'm like, nah, I'm good. Pull my bond, take me back to jail, I'm good.
Really?
Because I was still, my thinking was screwed up.
No doubt.
You know, it wasn't what Alex wanted, right? It wasn't the plan I had set out. I was uncomfortable. I didn't like that. I was like, I'd rather go back to being homeless.
Right. And take me back there.
Yeah.
Let me try to walk this off so I can get back out.
Because I knew what that was. I didn't know what this had.
Yeah.
I was to the point where I didn't even want any of it. I was sitting out under a tree, and this guy comes up to me, and he's the manager of the place, or assistant manager at the time. And, you know, he said, you know, it was like, look back on your life. Like, all your decisions, all your best intentions, have you led you up to this point? I was homeless. I had nothing. I blamed all my problems on everyone else. I had no real relationships with any human on this earth. You know, I had had a son within these years. Mm-hmm. I had a 19-year-old boy, a girl named Kayla, and didn't really even have a real relationship with him.
Right.
You know, I want to sit here and say, yeah, I was great dad. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
No matter what, I loved him. Yeah, I loved
there, him. But, you know, through the drugs and alcohol, I wasn't.
Right.
I wasn't to 100 with, you know, I wasn't to my best with
him. Right, absolutely, yeah.
And so, you know, I'd spent all my life, like, person who snitched on me is the reason why my house got raided. Or that guy driving the car is why I got in that car crash.
Yeah.
This and that, yada,
blame,
yada, yada.
Blame, excuses.
But the truth was, it was me. Yeah. It was all me. So I was like, you know what? I will do this to the best of my capabilities. And it was a 12-step. They had a 12-step outline, right? There, I was like, I will do these 12 steps to the best of my capabilities. And I will follow all the rules here. And when this is done, if I still feel the way I do, I'm going back to it.
Yeah.
That's what I said in my head.
What a blessing, man. That's almost like, and you know, there's, it's like, and this dude comes in and like, you're hell bent on like, this isn't me, man. This ain't going to work. Take me back, whatever. And then, you know, you have just a conversation with a dude, probably that you might be able to understand, or you look at him and he's like relating to you a little bit. He's breaking shit down to you to where you're like looking at this like, damn, I better maybe. All right. Let me see what's up with this.
Well, it's crazy how like, I don't know if it's like, I don't know how it's just crazy how the universe works like that. Where like probably 30, 40, 50, 100 people would have told me this before. Right.
Right.
But my ears weren't open. I wasn't ready for whatever reason. I might never know the answer for that, right? Right. But at this moment in this time with this person,
the ears open.
It opened. And I was like, okay,
I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I'll give it my best.
Wow.
100. I won't be perfect, but I'm gonna give it my best.
Yeah. So what it looked like when that started?
What was it like? You know, they tell me to put my trust into a higher power.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is like, you want me to put my trust in something I don't have a relationship with?
Yeah.
But the thing was, I was so desperate.
Yeah.
And then a moment of clarity comes in where it's like, okay, like I really need to do something, right?
Important words. I desperation, a moment of clarity. Guys, those are important words. I'm sorry. I just had to interrupt.
No, you're good. You're good.
Keep going. My bad.
So
you have this moment of clarity and you're like, all right.
And I'm like, I've trusted drug dealers. Mm-hmm. I've trusted people that I probably shouldn't have with certain belongings of mine or whatever that may look like. I put my trust in all these messed up areas.
Yeah.
You know, what could I lose by putting my trust in something greater than myself, right?
Right.
And really, all it was, my higher power wanted me for me at that time was to do the rest of the steps of this 12-step program, right? So I did do that. And then, like, as I progress through these steps, this relationship builds. And then instead of having spiritual beliefs, I start to have a spiritual experience.
Whoa.
And it's incredible because now it's like, I know for a fact that the universe, this power, God, whatever you want to call it, works in my life today.
How was that? Like, is there any way you can put that in words? With a spiritual experience instead of this belief system, you're actually like, it's something that is happening, right?
So like there's certain things that I no longer put on coincidence, but really when I knew that I had a spiritual awakening is I had left the recovery center. I had about 10 months sober. And, you know, the mother of my child and me, we had been in addiction together for so long,
right?
You know, 8 years. Yeah. We had been on and off together, trying to make this work, trying to take care of our kid, this and that.
Right.
And I saw her one night and she told me that she wanted to keep smoking weed and stuff. And I was like, you know, this path I'm on and this path you're on, they're just not together. Yeah. I love you so much. I want the best for you, but I can't, you know. Like we were talking before, she just wasn't ready.
Yeah.
The next day after work, I get a call and she had died.
Oh, man.
She had overdosed.
Damn, dude.
You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But at that moment, the first thought that came to my head wasn't like, what can I do to make it numb? It was like, this power I've tapped in, God, I'm going to trust in you. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And in hopes that me getting through this sober and continuing to stay sober will be able to help someone else when they go through this problem.
Right. I mean, it almost, you know, and the only reason I'm commenting on that is because I relate to it, right? But it almost like in this like grief, right? You're telling yourself, man, if I don't want to make this worse. You know what I mean? I don't want to, you know, the choice is there, man. You can fall right down and that could be your greatest excuse to screw up everything again, right? Or, you know, I mean, you could make something like, I know it's hard to say like something good out of something horrible, like a loss like that.
Right.
But still, there's something in there where you're like, man, I want to keep going and keep and do good. I want to react properly off of this. I want to, you know, I don't know, like the words I'm trying to say is maybe give it a reason or something. Does that make sense? You know,
I like the best way for me to respect her passing away.
That's it.
To take this darkness that hangs over it and turn it into light.
Give it a purpose, right?
Give it a purpose.
Great.
Because if I were to just numb myself, it wouldn't just be the feelings I had from her death, but also guilt, shame, like we talked about in the beginning. Right. All these things piled on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, give it a purpose. And of course, I'd had friends die before that and stuff because it, you know, it comes with that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, it just is, especially into hard drugs and alcoholics and stuff like that.
Sure.
It just is what it is.
I mean,
people are going to pass away. But hopefully us doing stuff like this, helping people, taking time out of our day to try to share a message of hope.
Saving lives.
It could help someone.
Saving lives,
even just one
man.
Person.
That's it, man.
It'd be worth it.
That's it, man. You know, and I just feel like, you know, I totally get that. You know, there was a time in my life, right, in early sobriety where I lost something so, you know, to an overdose, you know. And I could have, man, that would have been the time to really flip everything upside down. It would have been my greatest way to, like, use. And I could have justified that all the way to death, my own death, all the way back to prison, whatever.
Right.
All the way back to all that. But going through that sober and actually, like, being there for my other loved ones, you know what I mean? Being a part of like the healing process of that was probably the best decision I could have made at that time. Because even though I was experiencing this great, like gut-wrenching loss, I was able to be there just to to give a hug.
Man. Right.
And I wasn't a burden.
Yeah.
Like I didn't make my loved ones worry about me more. They could focus on what was happening and I could actually be helpful.
Right.
You know, so
actually show up in life.
Actually be a man.
You know, I took away from the universe, this world for so long with just negativity and in my actions. It only seems right to add to it and spread positivity.
Right. So you keep moving after the loss of your baby mother, right?
Right.
So
I keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And you know, I stay focused on others, you know, trying to help others. So like I found the answer to tapping into power, right? And sometimes it's hard to sit there and to explain it to someone, especially when they're early in sobriety or they're still getting messed up.
Yeah.
It's hard for them to grasp that. You know, I could try to sit here and describe over the phone, describe like a painting to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're not going to understand the full concept of it until you see the painting for yourself.
There you go.
And so that's what I try to do now.
Yeah.
I try to show people what recovery looks like, what it can do for your life.
Awesome.
And it's, you know, I've been at points in the past where it's like, you know, I'm gonna put on my sober Alex suit and be all great in front of all these people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I didn't have a program of action. I wasn't working on this internal condition, right? So I was walking around
going through the motions,
presenting a stage character to the world.
Wow. Oh man. Tell it. You are telling people something right now, man.
And it was at the end of the day though, it's just white knuckling it. Like I was just the internal ball we talked about. It was just, it would wind up to the point where I couldn't handle it anymore. And the only solution I had at that time was drugs and alcohol back then.
Yeah.
But now, you know, having a real solution, it's like, I just am who I am. I'm trying to be the best I can with what I have. But, you know, it's no longer I have to put on this show because that's fear. I'm fearful of how people look at me, or I was fearful of what they think or what they say.
Right.
And of course, this still comes up.
Yeah, you still get it.
Yeah, come on.
There's always an image that
I'm human.
There's always an image thing happening, man. But it's you know, it's like there's like the long term image, not knowing how to deal with that feeling and going like off the wire with that. Oh, what do they think? They think I'm weak, or they think I'm a pussy.
You know, right, exactly.
So let me tighten up. Let me get right. Or you can get the perspective of, hey, man, you know what I'm saying? What's happening? And you eat it. You take that image. You set it aside, and you try to be authentic.
And the more authentic someone is, the better results they get with individuals.
Yeah.
Because if I'm over here, I guess presenting something fake to the world. It's if I'm faking something, how can I give? I'm giving you fake, like I'm passing you on fake for you to carry out fake.
Wow!
Instead of giving you something real,
right? Something that'll stick to your ribs.
Exactly. you get better results with that.
Definitely, man. I'm with you all the way, and you know it's like. That's a process, man. You know what I mean? This is like what you're explaining. I'm taking it as like this is a process of recovery. You know, it's like there's these stages that you go through. You know, you get this enlightenment. So now you want to fill the world with it.
Right.
And then you get caught up in that, man.
Right.
You get caught up in that. I mean, like you said, you're a human being, man. You start getting that. It's almost like whenever you start getting that status for getting in that fight when you were 8.
Right.
Right, you're getting that attention. Well, there's also an attention that you get when you got it looking nice, when you're making that comeback. You know what I mean? And if you don't come to grips with that, that's why I think the steps are so important, right? Because you are in the steps, you have this inventory, right?
Right.
Like you are constantly checking yourself in the mirror. You know what I mean? And there's days where you're like, damn, I sold that.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't even, that wasn't me, man. You know, I did it like this because it might have been the easiest way to do it. Or I did it like this because it was like an impressive way to get the crowd, you know, get the crowd's attention. You know what I mean? And you got to check it and you go back to it again. I mean, that's why the tools that are offered in a sober life, you know, that's the difference between being dry and working a program of sobriety and trying to be in recovery. And it is for me. You know, that's how I dig it, because there's days where I'm just, you know, and I'm being honest with you, right? There's days where what's up?
Yeah.
You know, because it's the easiest way to like to make the day go by, man. And then, you know, I was just talking about this, is that I'm so blessed to have that reflective side of me. You know what I mean? Where I'm like, damn, dude, you know what I mean? Like, and instead of like being drenched in the disappointment of like not being who I try to authentically be.
Yeah.
You know, I revisit it, man. All right.
Well, see that, and that's the thing that I feel like, you know, some people might misconstrued, is that, you know, they see people go to a bunch of meetings.
Yeah.
So they're like, if I just go to a bunch of meetings, I'll stay sober. But the thing is, the solution is in these steps. Like, a sufficient substitute to the alcohol and drugs is found in these steps, and that's power, right? Yeah. Whatever power you want to call it. That's not my job. My job is to show people how to get tapped in. Mm-hmm. But the good thing about having fellowship and a sober network is that I can't see myself in my own picture. Mm. Meaning, so if I'm left up to myself and my own thinking, sooner or later, the way I view myself, I can justify the shit out of anything. I can make anything look good, and I can tell myself that I'm not doing any harm in certain situations.
Yeah.
But my sober network is those people I can take this stuff to and be like, okay, was I right or wrong? I think I was right. And homeboy look at me, he's like, nah, man, you're wrong. You need to do something about that.
That's the importance of that fellowship, bro.
Right.
That's that value of having a brother that is like, who is caring enough, right?
Right.
To understand you,
mm-hmm.
and to check you.
And to be honest.
With that rigorous honesty.
Right.
Right. Where you have to, where like they give you the flip side of the coin. Yo, why'd you do it? You know what I mean?
Right.
Then now you got to be accountable. You see, it's all these awesome, like, character building things in these steps that just really build you to be like, man, who, you know, who, what God meant you to want you to be. You know what I mean? You're surrendering. You want God's will. You know, you sincerely want that, and you're searching for it. And there's days where you're down and you got a homie that knows what's up, and that's the importance of that network. You know, because I got friends, man. I got friends that love me, right? And I love them back. Love them back. They're my homies. Like, I rocked out with them for years, right? But they're not that. Like, even my mom, I love my mother, right? I love her. And I know that she loves me unconditionally, right? But I can't bring these issues to her because it's not, you know what I mean? It just doesn't relate, man. Right. I got to come to see you.
Right. Someone who understands it fully.
Alex, man, you know, like, man, I'm trying to make these amends, man, but I'm not even feeling it. Like, you know, right. I have these expectations, you know.
I know, like, fine shit, if I bring up, like, fears to a normal person, like my fears, my self-centered fears most of the time.
Yeah.
If I bring them up to a normal person, they're like, what are you talking about? You're crazy.
Yeah.
That's why I have to take this to my brothers or just addicts and alcoholics in general that are in sobriety. Because they'd be like, I mean, come on. Is this a real fear or is this fake? We're trying to differentiate the false from the truth.
I always say this, right? I'm like, can you imagine, right? You go with your homies and you're watching the game, and one of your, you know, non-affiliated homies say, "Hey, man, you know, what you up to this week, man?" You're like, "Well, I'm just searching for all my character defects and
right.
I'm making a list of them and trying to deal with them, and I'm praying about each one of them that I don't want them anymore." Like,
Yeah.
Are they going to look back at you?
Or that, hey, I'm going to continuously look out for all these character defects for the rest of my life. What are you doing? Nightly inventory. What's that? It's to review my whole day of where I screwed up and where I could do better. It's like, why do you have to do that? Why can't you just wake up and be good? I'm like, dude, if I let this shit pile up on me, I'm done.
It's over.
It's over with.
It's a wrap, man. But at the same time, it's like the most like, it's where my connection to my higher power is. It's in that process. You know, it's where my fellowship is. It's right. Where like God communicates with me, you know, those prayers, that relationship. I understand, you know, like my priorities are, you know, I really doing God's will instead of, you know, saying God's will be done. Like really taking a day, like trying to do that, trying to surrender my will right. to God, and really in my heart wanting God's will to take over. Really doing that. That's a process, man.
And it's trial and error. We're still human. You know, I sit here and I've been given my will back later on in the steps. I've been given my will back, but it's along the lines of lining it up with God's will.
Yeah, paralleling it.
And the thing is, man, when you don't align it with God's will, you're going to find out.
Yeah.
Because there will be recourse. There's consequence for every action in this world, positive or negative.
No doubt.
But the thing is, like, when I mess up, I don't have to get high today. I have a solution now. I take inventory. I talk to people about it. I carry it on into my other, you know, in my sponsees. Try to tell them about it.
Mm.
Be like, yo, don't do this. Didn't really work out.
And I think the greatest payoff in that is that we get to do things like this. We get to discuss it. We get to give it away. All with the hopes of helping the suffering addict. So then it becomes not even about you, man.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Now it's about like somebody else coming in that door and like really caring, really listening, you know, or really being able to, you know, participate in their life, putting your number out there, saying, yo, you know, here's my number. They call.
You know, I'm not trying to be that guy who like, I can save the world. You know what I'm saying? For real. I know early in my sobriety, I built up this mentality of like, I want to save everybody. I want to share this with the world.
Right.
And of course, it's good to have that attitude, but in a sense, it's just, I just want to be a small part of something huge, something way bigger than me.
Wow.
And if we all just put our little parts in, we can all make the world a better place.
Absolutely, man. And that's what you're doing, man. You're making your little dent, right? I want to tell you something, dude. Hey, it's been a pleasure talking to you, man. I honestly, this is my first time meeting you. It was like through Crystal that's been here before on the show. And, man, this made me feel good, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a dope.
Good conversation, awesome, bro. Good conversation, man. And we really, truly appreciate you being here, giving it up, and like giving some people some inspiration, some hope, giving your perspective on what recovery looks like today. You know what I mean? What you're living today, where it came from, where it was bad. That's a courageous thing to do, bro. You know, you're letting the people know, man. And the Most High... and the Most High show, we really appreciate that. You know what I mean? So
thank you.
Guys, man, thank you so much for tuning in, man. We got some, like, we got a lot of feedback. We got, let's see, Shannon Wilbur, so proud of you, Alex. Will Hogan, good stuff, brother. James Burbach, is that how you say it? Burbach? I'm so proud of you. You've come a long way. You've been getting mad love, dude. You know what I mean? And we appreciate that, you guys. We appreciate you guys all tuning in. Oh, any final thoughts? Thanks, Leslie.
You know, all I can say is, like, I hope this helps somebody.
Yeah.
But in the large spectrum of it, this is helping me more than you know.
Absolutely.
So I thank you guys.
Thank you, man. That's it. Service, man, it always comes back twice over. We appreciate you all taking the time out and to listen to these real stories about real life, real recovery. Man, download the app. Share it with your friend. Download the Most High Media app. It is a Netflix of recovery, spirituality, the steps, mental health, addiction. You know, it's all that. It's all in the app, man. Share it with your friends. And thank you so much. God bless. What was that? That's not as good. One more time.